The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next, right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
WWE Superstar Big Show here to tell you, if you've been drinking, get a ride. Take a cab. Find another safe way to get home. Cops all across the country are cracking down on drunk driving. They will see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
If you're resident, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make a do with a do,
baby. Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on The Serious Side.
Welcome to The Serious Side, the 2013 year in review.
The investigation is underway who was behind Monday's attack near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. Though law enforcement authorities say they are treating it as a terrorism investigation.
That gave me cancer. There you are. The story inside the Post, though, read a little bit more like a medical journal than a tabloid. Transmission of the human papillomavirus is most common through vaginal or anal intercourse.
The military fights a growing epidemic of sexual assaults in the ranks. Outrage from the commander-in-chief to victims' rights groups.
I have no tolerance for this. I have communicated this to the Secretary of Defense.
You know, you're the female, long female here on the panel. You know, the thing that really just chaps my ass about this is the fact that if a male does this, oh, my God, we're going to throw the book at him. He's going to go to jail. You know, he's the lowest scum of the earth. You know, they even have jailhouse politics for people like that. They have to move these guys to separate units because even criminals think that's horrible. But yet we have a lot of these females, and most of them are blonde and blue-eyed, that get off. And it's ridiculous. It's a double standard, and I just get tired of this kind of nonsense. What say you? Jesus Christ.
Okay. First of all, watch your mouth. We're on the serious side. You said a couple of curse words there.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah, because I know you did me. Okay, I'm just going to say this.
Okay, but there's a big difference between Fox News and MSNBC. Well, you know what that difference is?
Tell me.
No, but do you know what it is?
I'm asking you. What do you think it is?
So you concede you don't know what it is?
I don't know what it is, no.
We actually do hard news here from 9 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
8 hours of hard news,
right.
All right? MSNBC doesn't do 1 hour of hard news. It's all let's push the liberal democratic agenda from sign on to sign off.
I mean, Bill, what is it you think that I have said about the network or written about the network?
You think that we've corrupted the sanctity of fair news coverage?
I think that ideological coverage of the news, be it of the right or be it of the left, has created a political reality in this country which is bad for America. I think it's made it difficult, if not impossible, for decent men and women in Congress, on Capitol Hill, to reach across the aisle and find compromise.
Good morning and welcome to The Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you, folks. Today is December 29th, 2013, the last Sunday in the month, in the year, I should say, of 2013, the last edition of The Serious Side
for this year. And, of course, welcome in. I'm Jay Rao. And you're listening to The Serious Side. The year in review, the 2013 year in review, it's always special when you're trying to talk about all the stories that we covered during this past year. And, of course, we can't do that. But we will try to do is we'll try to touch on some of the main topics. And so sit back and relax. 2 hours of great conversation coming at you right about now. But, of course, I never share the stage by myself. Let me introduce you to the players first and foremost. Ladies first, here on Ladies First, I'm sorry, here on The Serious Side. And let's start off with the very lovely Dr. Princess Aldea. She is a radio personality. She's a TV personality. She's the host of the True Purpose Development Show, Ladies First Radio. She's also a member of the J. Ryle Show, and she's also the host of the show. I keep forgetting the Transforming Detroit? I keep forgetting. I have trouble with that all the time, Dr. Princess.
It's Transforming Detroit.
Transforming Detroit. There it is. The one and only. There she is. Dr. Princess Aldea. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. And you?
Doing outstanding today. I can't wait to get into the conversation. I think it's going to be it's always a challenge when you're trying to talk about all the stories that we covered this past year. It's been a whirlwind 12 months, and so we have 2 hours to cover, 2.5 hours actually, to cover 12 months worth of stories. What do you think? Think we can get it done?
I think we can do it. If anybody can, we can. We'll make it happen.
All right. Thanks for being here this morning. All right. Listen, next up, the man who gets the first and last word here on The Serious Side. He made his triumphant return here a couple of weeks ago. One of the original three, the one and only G.O.G. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. I'm fine. How's everybody this morning?
Doing outstanding this morning, G.O.G. And I'll pose the same question to you. 2.5 hours to talk about 12 months worth of stories. What do you think?
It's going to be a very, very interesting show. A lot of things took place in 2013, and so you know something good. You know something good is going to come your way. At least the listeners should know here on The Serious Side.
Absolutely. And it looks like Mr. Elias, I'm not sure, looks like he's tied up with a caller, so I'll let him, we'll bring him in when he comes in. And, of course, Jerome Spree, our political strategist, he joins us after he has fulfilled his commitment to Clear Channel Radio. So let's get into this thing. Well, it looks like Mr. Elias is available. Let me introduce my main man, my right-hand man, the man who I can't get anything done without, the one and only Mr. Elias. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, all. Good morning, all. How's everyone doing this fine morning?
Wonderful. Thank you.
I'll ask you the same question, Mr. Elias. We have 2.5 hours to try to cram 12 months' worth of stories we've done here on The Serious Side. Think we can make it happen?
It's going to be rough, but we'll give it a shot, Jay. That's all we'll do is try. Nothing beats a failure but a try, baby. So let's get it done.
All right. Once again, you can call in 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You know, one of the main stories this past year, and it keeps coming up, and it's it remains prevalent today, is when we talk about the debt ceiling. You know, there was a lot of himahama about the debt ceiling this past year. People talking about how the president has run it up so high, and the president has a deficit so high, but yet and still you kind of look at the numbers, GOG, and I'll start the conversation off with you. You look at the numbers, and, you know, it's not as bad as people think it is. I mean, you know, you talk about where we are with the deficit, you know. People act like deficit is a bad word, and when you really look at it, all of us have debt. You know, if you pay a mortgage, you have debt. There is such a thing as good debt, right?
Yes, it is, and you're absolutely right. All of us have debt, and the country has it, and actually every country has it. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at, and, you know, of course, politics enters into the whole realm of the thing, look at the magnitude of the debt the country has, and, you know, it seems like it's just this huge astronomical number compared to everyday debt. But, you know, you're looking at a country's debt. And then, too, we all know that a lot of this heeing and hawing and going back and forth with the debt ceiling and the budget, a lot of that was politics. A lot of that was GOP playing what I call presidential games, inflating, you know, the situation larger than it really was. I'm not saying it wasn't important, because it was and still and always will be important, but a lot of what we heard about the debt ceiling coming from our lawmakers this year, large percentage of it was overinflated in politics. Because as we well know, if we listen to certain people in Washington, Barack Obama is responsible for everything from the debt ceiling to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. So there you have it.
You're absolutely correct about that. The Republicans blame him for everything. You know, Dr. Princess Aldea, you know, yesterday on our broadcast, the J. Ryle Show, every Saturday, 5 p.m. Central, shameless plug. At the end of the show, we do a thing called Final Thoughts, and one of our colleagues made a comment about how the president is running up the debt. Our children will be paying for the debt. And listen, we're not saying that the debt is not an important issue, but when you listen to what he had said, it sounded like something that came from Fox News. And what they do is they distort the truth to make it, you know, justify their points, but they really, in my opinion, don't point out everything. And he and I had somewhat of a heated exchange towards the end of the show because I'm like, look, guy, don't spew that stuff out here. If you don't have the facts, then be quiet. Stop repeating what you hear on Fox News. Your thoughts on the debt?
Well, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm reminded also, even when we're talking about the debt ceiling here, and yes, you do, there is such a thing as good debt, and there has been issues in past where there was issues with the debt ceiling, but they never made a big public, you know, issue like they did this time. And they Pardon?
They did make a big public issue. That's why we're talking about it.
No. That's what I said, Jay. Are you listening?
Oh, okay.
I said in the past, I'm saying when there were other presidents in office, they had debt ceiling issues, but they never made it a big issue like they did with this one. Put on your good ear. So, yes, they're doing things just to make negative comments and to add to the political theater that the GOP has been doing all along, and how they've been running the White House for many, many, many years. This candidate here, hey, he's done a different thing. He's handled his business differently, and just because they put this stuff in the news, one thing I love about our president is that he doesn't let it move him in what he is working on or doing. He stays neutral and keep it moving and stays focused. And I think, if anything, we should take a lesson from that. So, yes, the debt ceiling is not a bad thing. We have to have some debt. Well, debt, actually, you can have good debt where it creates excellent credit. In our case, yeah, we've had some issues, but the choices that President Barack Obama made in this situation, he did what he needed to do. He did what he always does. He makes good decisions. He's very strategic, and he does what he does. They're always making big issues when there aren't issues, and they're reporting things as bad when it's really not bad. No different than the healthcare situation. You have people on the street. What do they do? They have, and this was a prime example. You have people on the street asking them questions about the healthcare reform. They were asking them, all of the questions that were asked were in reference to the healthcare reform, facts about it. And the people would say, oh, no, I don't like that one. I don't like that one. Well, do you like affordable health? Yes, that's the one I want, when it's the same thing. So,
yeah. Let me get to Ms. Elias here, because we have so much to cover here in a very short period of time. You know, Dr. Princess O'Dea, one of the things she said during her response was, we talked about, you know, our credit ceiling. The U.S., you know, for the first time in this country's history, we lost our AAA-plus credit rating because of some of the shenanigans by the Republicans. Looks like he's out answering the phone again. This will go to you, GOG. You know, once again, it looked like, you know, we lost our triple A pristine credit rating because of the shenanigans of the Republicans. You know, bottom line is that, you know, we can always go back and talk about how a lot of this nonsense went down because of who was in the White House. And Dr. Prince's idea brought up a great point. We never heard about, you know, defaulting on the nation's credit. We never heard of any of this stuff until President Obama came into office. It was just a mundane thing to do. Hey, it was time for us to raise the ceiling. It was time for us to do those types of things. We just did that. But because of the president, or because who the president is, it became a national story. Your thoughts?
That's indicative of everything that has taken place, every major thing, from the debt ceiling to Obamacare in Washington during the term of this president. It seems like that no matter what it is, the Republicans are determined that it's not going to get done unless there's some kind of a bad mark left on, you know, the legacy of this president. They seem bit on not being able to sit down and say, okay, let's work this out. It was the same way with this debt. You're right. We never heard of any of this before. Okay, we've had standoffs before, but we've never heard of them going to the extreme of some of these things. And it's because we have a set of lawmakers that refuse to work with this administration on a level table without any veiled agendas. And you know, it's unfortunate here that a lot of this, of their agendas, a lot of these veiled agendas have nothing at all to do with politics and everything
True.
To do with the president. Now, if this was politics they were playing, most people would look at it and, you know, they still wouldn't like it. But, you know, think, okay, well, that's just politics. But I think after one term and going into a second term, speaking in regards to the president, people that didn't want to believe it before can't deny what's actually happening now, because it's still occurring as we speak right now. Anything that this president or the Democrats want to get done, anything major, there's always a roadblock or some nonsense put up to hold it up, derail it to the point that something bad burns off against it. And I think it's just a determination by a group of people to make sure, or try anyway, that this president doesn't get out of the second term or doesn't get out of the presidency altogether without some kind of a black mark on his legacy. And that's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate, because in the end, the American people pay. It's just like this weekend, yesterday. I venture to say, if it had been another administration, Congress would not have left Washington a week or so ago without resolving the issue for the 1.3 million people that got cut off from unemployment yesterday. I mean, that's kind of a cold
yeah.
thing to do, you know, right after Christmas. And, you know, it wasn't even discussed that much. You know, I know it was agreed upon, but, you know, that's huge when you start talking 1.3 million people,
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, and it's not a gradual thing, of course. Yes, they knew it was coming. That argument can be made. But it's like, bam, all of a sudden, they don't have any income coming in. And here again, you know, we can look to our lawmakers playing a tug of war. And, you know, these are the sort of things that you see.
You know, Mr. Elias, GLG brings up an excellent point when you talk about this. You know, you're right, and GLG pointed out, you know, now we're in a situation where people, there are, you know, millions of people out there, 1.5 or 1.2, GLG, I can't remember the number, 1.2 million people
million.
Who are 3 million are going without their unemployment benefits. They've run out. And so, once again, the GLG's talking about cutting this, cutting that. You know, the thing is that yet and still we take money from these people that need it. But then again, we give, you know, these oil companies that makes billions and billions of dollars all these subsidies, which they really and truly don't need. This is hypocritical, and it just chaps my behind. What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Elias?
Well, Jay, this is a norm for government, man. And I'm sorry. These people support their elections. These are the people that give them money. These are the people that back them. These are their lobbyists puts money in their pocket. That's the name of the game, man. They don't care about the American people. They claim to care about the American. The only time they care about the American people is when it's time to vote. And when they were after that, they push us to the backside and don't give a damn. And we with our short memory, soon forget how they treated us. Well, hell, if I was an American voter and you canceled my benefits and I was on unemployment and I'm looking for a job and I can't find one, guess what? Everything I can do to get your everything I can do to get you out of office, you gotta go. I'm sorry, but once again, we don't vote for the right reasons. We vote for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, but the thing is that the Republicans are doing this because they are banking on the fact, Dr. Prince's idea, that people are not going to look at them as the reason why this is going on. I mean, you know, the average American is going to say, well, look who's the president. This happened. He promised all these jobs. I don't see a job. You know, so the Republicans are relying on people to say, hey, look, the uneducated voter, which we talk about on the show all the time, you know, the bottom line is that that's what they're banking on, Dr. Prince's idea, people who are not paying attention to the issues.
And yes, you are right. I believe that the Republicans may be banking on that, but I don't believe that the public is feeling or falling for the okey-doke so much as they were in the beginning. I mean, a lot of things have happened recently that really put the GOP on blast of their intentions and how malicious they are. So I really think that you'll have a lot more people who are going on the other side, and they're really going towards just really knowing face value that this is another one of their little antics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get out to the phone lines. Mr. Elias, man, who do we have out there on the line?
We have Steve from Indianapolis on the line, too.
One of our former colleagues, Steve from Indianapolis. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning.
What are your thoughts, man? What are your thoughts on
this? The thing is, it is not President Barack Obama's fault on that debt. The Republicans' hands were voting every single time that debt ceiling went up. And if Democrats want to maintain power, they really need to start talking about how the elite, how the rich, how the corporations are hedged in gold and silver by trillions and trillions of dollars. They do not care when the dollar crashes because they're hedged and they're protected. They have assets. They're liquid. They're not worried about it. Who's not protected is the American people. And if Democrats want to maintain power, they may need to start open up their mouths and talking about that. And if the world and other nations really supported the dollar, they would sign an agreement to keep buying dollars over an X amount of years. But they won't sign that agreement because they don't want to support the dollar. They're not happy about the value of the dollar going down. All you have to do is get an international agreement with other nations, and this whole issue would end. I mean, do you support the dollar or do you not? They don't. That's why they won't sign an agreement. So every single time the debt ceiling went up, the Republicans voted along with Democrats. So that's why I don't look at what they say on TV. I look at what you do. I don't care what you say. I look at what you. It's like a woman telling you she loves you, and she's cheating on you with your best friend. I don't care what she says. I'm looking at her actions. Same thing with the Republican Party. And it's impossible to raise the debt ceiling without a Republican vote. It hasn't happened in them. I can't even remember the last time it has happened. So they're hypocritical. And if you're receiving government contracts and your company is hedged in gold and silver, if the dollar crashes, you don't care because you're going to get paid all day, every day. Guaranteed government contracts. You don't care what happens to the economy because you're protected.
And that sounds like, you're right, Steve, and thanks so much. Hold in there, hang in there. You're right. I mean, the bottom line is that these people are protected, Mr. Elias. They have money. They're not concerned about that. Oh, looks like Jerome has checked in, our political strategist from SpreeRadio.net. Good morning, Jerome, and happy holidays.
Morning. Good morning. How you doing?
Everybody's doing great, man. We're just talking about the year in review, and we have so many things to talk about in 2.5 hours. We're trying to cover all the stories that we've covered here on the Sirius side in the past 12 months. I guess I'll ask you the same question. Do you think we can get it done in two hours?
No.
Okay.
I can't take you through, like, I mean, there's like 12 topics that would take 2 hours that I can think of.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, we're talking about the debt ceiling right now. That was one of the main things we're talking about this past year was the debt ceiling. Your thoughts?
Well, my thought about the debt ceiling generally is that we never used to hear anything about a debt ceiling because it's ridiculous to vote for a budget and then once the interest come due say that we need to raise our credit limit, right? So there should
right.
not be a debt ceiling to begin with because Congress is the ones who actually vote on the budgets and who actually submit them. So you can't not pay your credit card bill because your interest came back for that year and you said, oh, no, that's too much money. I'm not paying that much for something that I bought 2 years ago. It's just ridiculous to even have one.
Yeah, and I was talking about, I made this comment before I think you checked in. I talked about how one of our colleagues on the Jay Ryle show made a comment about, you know, the grandchildren paying for our debt, and he just went on this whole Fox News thing doing his final thoughts, and I said, look, get your facts straight. You know, bottom line is you want to talk about the deficit and all these different things. The president, everyone has acknowledged that we need to take care of that, but the bottom line is that, look, the numbers are dropping. So don't come on the radio spewing that nonsense. Your thoughts?
And that's silly because if you look at it in a very easy way, you take out a 30-year mortgage on your house, let's just say, for example, but you pass
right.
away and you give it to your children. Well, they inherited not just the cushion in it, like the equity in it, they inherit the debt if they want to keep the house or they get to sell it. So technically when you are investing in your child's future, you take out student loans. Like, whatever it is, we have to exist so that your children can exist. We don't exist in a vacuum. We don't start off at zero credit every generation that's born. You say, hey, let's just wipe out all that debt and not pay it. So when you say that, you're creating more problems than you're fixing. Matter of fact, you're not fixing any problems by not paying the debt. What are you going to say? Oh, we need to all starve and kill off half the population so that my kids for the future won't have no debt? That's silly.
Wow.
That is ridiculous. That's ridiculous to even mention. So even having a conversation in a serious way is that much ridiculous when you look at it from the standpoint of what debt is. Debt is just getting credit for something that you purchased. You don't just get open. I mean, sometimes you have open credit cards, which, you know, the United States has an open credit card. But the problem is that, yes, we have credit. So what are you going to do? You don't say our children are going to pay for this like they give a rat's about children when they cut free lunch and school lunch and all of that. They don't care about nobody's kids. They care about their kids.
You're right about that. You're absolutely correct about that. And, you know, the thing is that really kills me when people make these comments is that they make them once again, oh, you have to look at the news. No, you need to dig below the, you know, GOG. They got to dig below the surface. I mean, because they're on top of it, and they're trying to, you know, they think they know what the hell they're talking about, but they don't. And I said, listen, if you don't know what you're talking about, I invite you to tune in every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Central, and we'll make sure that we set you straight on some of this nonsense that you're spewing.
And you're absolutely right, Jay. That's the best advice you could possibly give any of them, because people that think like that, and you mentioned it earlier, those are the dangerous ones. Those are the uninformed voters that they look at Fox News, they look at whatever news source, and they take it and they run with it. They don't look below the surface. They don't do their research. And, you know, they make their decisions and cast aspersions based on what corporate-run news is shoved down their throats. And that's dangerous.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, we're looking at the 2013. It's 28 minutes after the hour. We're almost at the bottom of the hour. We have a lot to get into. We're looking at some of the top stories that we discussed this past year on the Sirius side. Here's one other story. Let me get it started, and then we'll have some comments on the other side. We'll take a break. But another big story that really hit us this year, let's take a listen to the soundbite, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
was the man who shot Renisha McBride in her face through his lock screen door in fear of his life? Not according to prosecutors, now charging Theodore Wafer with second-degree murder, manslaughter with intent but not malice, and a weapons count.
I am saying that we do not believe he acted in lawful self-defense.
On November 2nd, just a couple of hours before she was killed, McBride crashed her car. About 2 hours later, at 4:30 in the morning, and several blocks from the accident scene, police say she appeared on Wafer's front porch where he fired a single shotgun blast through the lock screen door, killing the 19-year-old. McBride was drunk, nearly three times the legal limit in Michigan. Yet prosecutors say it did not play a role in charging Wafer.
We don't feel it's relevant to our charging decision at all in this case.
Prosecutors also rule out race playing a role. Police say Wafer told them his shotgun went off accidentally, that he heard noises and thought someone was breaking in. McBride's family wonders why he didn't just call police, that their daughter likely just wanted help from a stranger and wound up losing her life.
I can't imagine in my wildest dreams of what that man feared from her to shoot her in her face.
He shot her head off through a screen locked door. This monster that killed my daughter. I hope he spends the rest of his life in jail.
At his first court appearance after turning himself in, Wafer appeared stoic. He pleaded not guilty. He's described by his lawyers as an airport worker with the highest security clearance who cares for his 81-year-old mother and his brother. Neighbors have described him as low-key and law-abiding. He now faces the legal fight of his life. Susan Candiotti, CNN, New York.
One of the many stories that we talked about this past year, we're going to definitely have a discussion about that story. Listen, folks, you can participate. 347-850-1272 is our caller number, 347-850-1272. It's the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. We're going to step out, take a quick break. We'll talk about that story and much, much more. It's the Serious Side on a beautiful Sunday morning. Hope everything's going well with you and your neck of the woods. And we appreciate you guys as listeners. The Serious Side has done very well this past year, only because of you guys. We'll be back with our esteemed panelists after this. Don't go anywhere. Happy holidays from all of us here on the Serious Side. Serious Side.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Tell me he left me, whisper in.
Welcome to The Serious Side, the 2013 year in review.
Welcome back in. 347-850-1272 is our call-in number. 347-850-1272. Serious Side, the J. Ross Show happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Before we left out on break, we heard a sound bit from one of the stories that we covered this year. But before we get into that, let's say good morning to everyone. Once again, let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Princess Aldea, the Queen of Inspiration. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good morning, everyone.
Sounds like you are in a vacuum, so I'm not really sure what's going on with the audio, but you may want to fix that. The man who gets the first and last word here on the Serious Side, G.O.G., good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I am great.
And, of course, my main man, my right-hand man, Mr. L.E.S., good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Happy New Year.
And the smartest man in the world, our political strategist, Jerome Esprit. Good morning, Jerome. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
Well, folks, we talked about before the break the 19-year-old that was shot in Detroit. We heard the sound bit on that. And, you know, let's since that's your neck of the woods, Dr. Princess Aldea, give us an update as far as what's going on with that story. Do you know what's happening with that at this point?
I'm not sure of anything as, that is more than what you've just played. No, I'm not. But I will say this. That has been a conversation piece here. People were very disgruntled. And, people mainly feel, in Detroit especially, those who were, which we've had conversations with it and some colleagues of mine, et cetera, and the first thing they say is that this was a racial situation, this, that, and the third. Then you have those who, and I'm going to say, I'm going to give my two cents on it, the man was scared, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been scared. In Detroit recently, there have been a lot of killings. A lot of murders in people's driveways. And a BTE gentleman just was shot in three places in his head, his chest, and I think his leg. Was getting in his vehicle one morning in his driveway. People drove off and left. You know, these things are happening. So you have someone who come at 4:30 in the morning, and whatever their reason is, it doesn't justify what he's done. But it also should be considered this very strong probability that it had nothing to do with race, but the fact that, hey, you live in Detroit, and this, you know, who could this be? And it's a it could have been a situation. It's a high probability. And I think that when our attorneys, the legal support, they play the race card, when they just elected a white mayor. That didn't go over favorable. All kind of race things popped up during that situation. You saw very clearly how the United States sees how clearly racial, you know, how segregation is still here, how racism is still prevalent. Well, we saw it when we saw a white mayor come into Detroit now.
All right, it's got to be fast moving, so I don't want to cut you off, but we definitely have so much to talk about. But I heard someone going, I think that was Mr. Elias. I'm going to venture to say that he doesn't agree with your comments. Mr. Elias, what are your thoughts?
Not even close, man. This dude, this happened in Bloomfield Heights or Bloomfield Hills, whatever that hell it is. Hell, the police, after he called the police, they were there in 2 minutes. So
that's
if he
true.
Was so damn, if he was so damn scared, why didn't he call the police? Hell, come on, let's just be honest. Okay, I'm calling the police and I'm going to grab my weapon. If you try to come in my house at that point in time, the police are on their way. Now, if you break your hand in my house, then I'm going to take action. I'm not going to open up the door and then blast you in your face with my shotgun. Really? Come on. Let's just be honest. We have the truth here. This is what we're about. We're not going to sugarcoat nothing here. This guy did it. He opened up the door and he blasted this young girl in her face. They killed her. And then we're sitting out here
true.
Talking about...
And that is true.
About, I'm not going... our name is race, then what are we going to claim it? Hell, if they were there, if the police were there in 2 minutes, why couldn't he wait? It's just child lost tongue. And we're talking about
what?
We're not.
Come on,
stop.
Black on black. Let me say something.
Go with
it. It doesn't matter. Bloomfield Hills, guess what? I live in Bloomfield Hills, and no, yeah, we can probably sometimes, I have to tell my kids, please lock the door, okay, guys? Sometimes they won't lock the door, you know, because they feel safe, and it's all safe. Just in Birmingham, though, not too long ago, which people are getting bold. It was a black person, came from, they were from Detroit. They came to Birmingham, which is my neighborhood city. And who would have thunk it? At 5 o'clock in the morning, this guy robs a guy that's going into Groves High School. And he, you know, shoots up in the air and all this. Well, they're freaking out. The whole Bloomfield, Birmingham, oh, my God, I can't believe it. They shut down a club not too long ago, and it was our brothers coming over into the suburbs, and they want to have riots. They had shootings in downtown Birmingham. So what I am saying to you, our people, unfortunately, we create this fear.
Come on, we're not.
No, we do no because in Detroit,
come
in, just because you know
Stop.
because. It creates that probability and that fear. Some people are more fearful of it than others.
So would you say that every black person that knocks on someone, white person's door?
I didn't say that, but I said some people. But I'm saying the probability that he was actually very scared is very probable. Yeah, in Detroit, somebody's going to knock.
He opened up his screen door, a locked screen door. He opened up his door and had his screen door locked to blow her brains out. Really? He was that damn scared?
Come on,
they are
scary.
Let's get some more people involved in this. Let's get some more people involved in the conversation, Miss Elias. Something's up with your audio, Miss Elias. You're coming in real bad. We're going to try to get that fixed. Jill G, what are your thoughts on this?
I think this is straight-up murder. I believe he shot this young lady at point-blank range. He's behind a locked screen door. If he opened the hardwood door, whatever his door is made out of, and he was that afraid, it would have been too simple for me, anybody, even him. If you open the door and you see something you don't like, close it back, lock it, call the police, get your rifle, and if whomever that is on your porch start doing something, you know, to the next level, like you hear him fooling with a window, okay, now, you know, I'm going to meet you at the window. But, you know, from everything that's been put out on this story, this young lady was on his porch at his front door. He's behind a locked screen door. You got to make a conscientious decision to shoot this person, you know, at this point. He says it was an accident. Maybe he's trigger happy. But, you know, it just reeks of straight up, point blank, murder.
What about you, Jerome? What are your thoughts on this, man?
I was trying to turn my ears off to hear that, but I couldn't do it. I thought you were talking to me when you were talking to GLG about that assessment of it. The problem is this: you don't shoot anybody in the face by mistake. You have to point a gun at them. So to actually have an accident while you have a gun in somebody's face, you are wrong for that, and you shot them through a door. So I don't know what it is about black folks who have issues with race when black people say something about race. I really don't have an assessment on that part. But the fact is that those accidents only happen to black people. Like, that is really obvious to me that you cannot take race out of the equation just because a white person say they were scared. That is an easy defense for white folks because now we feel empathy for the white person who claims that he was scared. George Zimmerman said he was scared, and everybody bought that bull. So that's sickening to me, and it's really hard for me to process anything else other than a case when somebody white says that they're scared, that even black people go, well, maybe they were scared. Remember all that black stuff that happened years ago? It's like they start pulling out black cases to prove their point that white people could have been scared, like they watch black people news. He probably didn't even see any of that stuff. So it's amazing to me. I have nothing else other than that. But he really did, as far as the case is concerned, he's making a case on, what is it, white privilege. He's making a case on his whiteness being a motivation for him reacting, right? Because his whiteness says that since our image of black people are this, hey, I was scared, I got rattled, and didn't call the police, I just shot him. That's your reason for killing black people is your whiteness. That should be his defense.
You know,
talking about using the race card.
You know, I would love to see, and maybe somebody has seen it, what this guy's hardwood door looked like. Most doors, now I know, I realize not all of them, but most doors have a peephole or some provision, you know, that you can see who's outside. If you're scared, why open the door?
Yeah, I think he shot him through the screen door.
Right. So screen door, when they say screen door, unless he didn't have, you know, unless that was the only door he had, but when you say, you know, when they say screen door, I'm thinking, like most screen doors, you know, then there's the hardwood security door, that, you know, the actual door itself. So, maybe I need to look this up, but I'm thinking he had opened the hard door, and, you know, there's the screen door, and now he sees the lady, and he has to make the conscientious effort to first point the gun at her and then pull the trigger. So, you know, my whole thing is if he was scared as he said he was, and most of us would probably be a little alarmed before in the morning somebody knocking on our door, why open the door? You know, most people would go through the door, who are you? Who is it? What do you want? And if we don't hear anything that, you know, makes sense, I'm not opening the door. I'm calling 911 and let them deal with you.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. She was not at his door either. She was still on the porch.
Okay.
And he shot her while she was on the porch, not even at the door. So
Boom.
His threat was her pretty much walking away or being, you know, farther away from the door.
Boom.
So, he probably just opened the door, the locked screen door or whatever it was, and he pointed a gun at her head. Like, there's no mistake in that. You can't even make a case that, oh, I was scared, so I pointed at her head and it accidentally went off. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, for us even considering that is kind of crazy. Because you could not recreate that in your scaredness to point a gun at somebody's head and lift it up to your face and tell them how scared you were. That's a shot to the head is not an accidental thing unless you're really close to a gun. If she's anywhere like 4 or 5 feet away and he shoots through a door and hits her in the head, he was pointing it at her head.
I agree. That was a murder.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. 347-850-1272 is our calling number. It's about 10 to the top of the hour. It's the year review 2013, the Sirius side, once again, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS radio network. So much to get into this morning. Let's take a segue from there and let's talk about another topic. It deals with race a little bit. We talked about there were, and I'll go to you, Ms. Elias. Let me start a conversation off with you on this particular particular topic here. The president was criticized this past year for not having enough African Americans in his cabinet. Now, we had that conversation here earlier in the year, and let me ask you, now that, you know, we're at the end of the year, are you happy with the president and what he has in his cabinet as far as diversity?
Diversity. I think it'd be a little bit more diversified, Jay, but, you know, am I unhappy? Not actually, but I think it could be a little bit more. I'm a little unsatisfied with it, but I think it could be more diversified, to be honest.
Well,
and
well,
not
let
just
me
for
ask
Africa.
Not just what?
No, go ahead.
But African Americans. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Not just with African Americans, but with all. I mean, more women, more men. You know, more men, more men and women.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you, Dr. Princess O'D. Is this a situation where, hey, listen, the best qualified people got the jobs, regardless of what their color is? Can he make that argument?
Yeah, because I believe, well, considering the source, I believe absolutely. I don't think our president has given us indicators of him being prejudiced or biased, and even being one of those that feel like they have to smooge up to the white people to impress them or anything. I don't think he's interested in that. I believe that he has given us indicators that he's a very fair man, and one who is strategic and utilizes, well, he implements with great judgment, I think. So I believe that he, whoever was qualified, they were qualified.
Well, GOG, you know, listen, I'm a former HR person, and one of the things that I find myself doing, when you start going through resumes, you start looking at people to start doing, you know, people to fill job positions and stuff like that, you kind of do go after the most qualified person, and then all of a sudden you look up and says, wow, you know, where the brothers at, you know, and that was the name of that topic, matter of fact, where the brothers at. So let me go to you. Do you think, are you happy with what the president's done as far as with his cabinet, as far as the diversity on his cabinet? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I am. I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, when people start talking diversity, especially in this instance with the president and, you know, who he's appointed and, you know, the people that have, you know, got positions in the government, high-level positions in the government under his administration, when people start talking diversity specifically about that, they tend to black and white it, and they marginalize it. But when you look at the whole picture, I would say, his appointments, and he's been quite diverse, because you've got Hispanics that have gotten in, you've got blacks that have gotten in, and you've gotten whites that have gotten in. I mean, and for him to try and appease, you know, the critics and some of his own voters out here that are saying, I don't think you have enough, well, let's just be real about this, I don't think you have enough blacks in your administration, he would fall right into the trap that a lot of people would want him to fall into. And, you know, we all know no matter what way he goes, there's going to be a group of people that's not going to be happy with it. So to answer your question, I don't have a problem with the diversity of the Obama administration. I think it's been across the board. It looks like that everybody that has at least been appointed to or acquired a mid- to high-level position, they earned it. And, I mean, you know, they've qualified to do it. You know, race or gender really didn't come into play. But if you want to look across the board, he's been quite diverse. Take race out of it.
All right, same question, different person, smartest man in the world. What are your thoughts, Jerome?
I don't really have I don't know what to think about that. I don't have an opinion on if I think if he has enough. I don't know what to think about that. I've worked on transition teams before. And the mm-hmm. and the problem is that when you start getting into higher governmental transition teams and trying to get appointees, you have to hire people within the department or has experience there who knows how it works.
Right.
And
right.
you have to remember over the last, 30, 40 years, how many black people actually had higher level positions in a lot of those departments, and then which ones are actually Democrat or look at the world in the way that you want it to be kind of thing, right? And so you have to get those people, get their ideology out of there, because they were mainly Republicans. Like when Republicans hold office, when you talk about George H., George W. Bush, and even during the Clinton time, there was not a lot of Democrats that were in, they were department heads, but they weren't in the middle ranking part that they can actually move up. So I would beg I would say this. The value of what President Obama is doing won't show mm-hmm. up for another 4 to 5 years, because all of the black people who work there and from what I understand from people who I know who've been there, there is a ton of black folks who work in the White House that work mm-hmm. in a lot of areas that are getting the experience to be in those positions in the future. So I think what that cultivating, that cropping of black folks, we're going to watch a different land. But when you go into office and you have to appoint, you have to appoint someone who knows something about those departments, and they usually take somebody who was in one level or another of them prior to getting there. And then, you know, let alone the confirmation hearing stuff is crazy. But anyway, like, there are things that you have to consider, so I can't judge him on that for an appearance sake, I guess, but I can't look at it from that spot. It's difficult.
Okay. All right. 347-850-1272 is our call-in number. You know, once again, it's the year review, 2013. We're taking a look at some of the stories that we talked about here on the Sirius side. Here's another soundbite from one of the stories that we discussed this past year.
It was a wild scene, and it's hard to believe it all started with a simple speeding ticket. You're doing 71 back there on a 55, okay?
Oriana Farrell and a state police officer are arguing over a ticket just south of Taps.
I'll be right back. Go ahead and turn the vehicle off for me.
But as the cop walks off, Farrell does the opposite, pulling away instead. So he pulls her over again. The officer isn't too happy.
Get out of the vehicle. Get out of the vehicle right now.
You can see the officer try to pull Farrell out while the five kids inside scream. Her 14-year-old son gets out but thinks again when the officer pulls his taser. The struggle continues.
You're already facing evading charges right now. You ran away from me, okay?
Sir, I pulled back over. I didn't run away. Do you see my children? I'm not trying to do anything wrong. I'm just trying to take them to the real ground.
Okay. Finally, Farrell agrees to get out and talk, but the conversation doesn't last long.
Turn around and face your vehicle.
Ma'am,
listen to me.
Farrell and the cops struggle as she tries to get back into the van. While that happens, the 14-year-old gets out again. And this time, he rushes the officer, trying to defend his mom. After a short tussle, the boy runs back into the minivan. The officer tries to get him out while backup arrives.
Open the door!
Open the door!
Farrell starts to drive off while another officer fires at the minivan full of kids as young as six. Farrell then takes them on a four-minute high-speed chase into Taos, cutting into wrong-way traffic before eventually pulling over and giving up in front of a hotel. Her 14-year-old son is arrested, and so is she.
Very scary situation that happened. It's a story that we talked about this past year. All right, we're going to step out. We'll pick up the next set with that story and much, much more. It is the Year Review 2013. The Serious Side, 347-850-1272. You can be a part of the conversation. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Topic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident, not from the South, my little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you folks, and welcome into the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Powerhouse Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
What?
funeral is underway for a 15-year-old Chicago honor student who was shot to death in suspected gang violence. Hadia Pendleton was a band majorette and had recently traveled to the D.C. area to perform at events surrounding the inauguration. First Lady Michelle Obama is attending the funeral, along with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Welcome to The Serious Side, the 2013 year in review.
Top of the hour, 347-850-1272 is our calling number, and who could forget such a tragic story? A young lady who marched for the president during his inauguration ended up dying a few weeks later, being shot, looks like by random violence in Chicago. Let's say good morning to our panelists again. Let's say good morning to the one and only, the very lovely Dr. Princess Adeya. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everyone.
And, of course, the man who gets the first and last word here on the serious side, the one and only G.O.G. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing just great.
Smartest man in the world. This guy is going to be the next African-American president, Jerome Esprit. What's going on, Jerome?
Hey, what's going on? Good morning.
You notice he didn't deny that. He was like, yeah, okay, I'm putting it together right now.
He got my vote.
No, that's not going to happen.
Oh, man, and my right-hand man, Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm on the Obama administration. That's why, I mean, we need more brothers like Jerome on there, man.
Yeah, so it looks like he has four votes. You have a long way to go, Jerome, but at least you have four from all your colleagues here on the serious side.
You know what's funny about that, about me saying that? Every campaign that I've done, every time I say that, politicians remind me, never say that you're not going to do something because you'll end up doing it. But I'm not running for office. That's not going to happen.
Not yet, anyway. Okay.
No, not yet. Not going to happen. No, you can say yet if you want to. I said not.
Oh, man. We're an hour away from on a need-to-know basis with our very own Jerome Esprit. Fun facts. Listen, stuff that we really don't hear. I like to call it the undercurrent of what's going on in the news world. It's great information, so stay tuned. That's coming up in about an hour. We have about an hour left to try to fit in all these stories, plus our football picks are coming up. Before we go, Chatterbox, you can participate in Chatterbox regardless whether you're in the chat room or not. We monitor social media websites, and so if you leave comments on one of the sites that we monitor, if it's a good comment, we'll definitely read it during the Chatterbox section of the show. Before the break, we heard about, we listened to a soundbite of the situation that happened with a young lady who was traveling with her kids in a car. They tried to pull her over. She didn't pull over. But when she finally did pull over, she took off again. When they got her again, she decided that she wasn't going to be arrested, and so then she took off, and a cop shot at the car. Now, all I know at this point on this story, Mr. Elias, is that the cop was fired who shot at the car because, according to the police officer, he was aiming at her tires. I guess he had been watching T.J. Hooker, a marathon of T.J. Hooker or something, thinking he could do this, which is ridiculous. But the bottom line is we had this conversation. It was a great conversation. And I remember KP, he was here doing the conversation as well. Let's talk about it for a few minutes. Your thoughts on that particular story, dealing with the young lady in the minivan driving off with her kids in the car?
Well, like I my thoughts to my business have not changed on this, man. I as a man that's dealt with the, you know, police, I don't trust at all, man. So, and I just don't trust the police officer at all. I probably wouldn't have done what she did. But I don't trust police officers at all, man. Just after what I've been through with them. So, I mean, anything that they do, man, I just, you know, I've watched police officers kill people. You know, saw on the news where the guy got shot in the back of in Florida where he was just going to his mother's car, you know, and what just going, you know, his mother's car, and thinking he was breaking it into them. So, as far as police officers, I don't trust them. So, you know, did she do the right thing? No. With kids in the car? No, she didn't. But bottom line is, I can understand it. I can understand why she did what she did.
Wow. You know, GOG, you weren't here on the show. You hadn't returned back at that point. Interested to get your comments on this particular topic. Well, what do you think about that whole situation, GOG?
Everybody except the kids were wrong in this one. She was wrong. The cop was definitely wrong. Everybody in America knows that.
when a police officer pulls you over or attempts to pull you over and you refuse to do so, or you pull over and then you pull off. At that point, whatever happens afterward, more than likely is not going to be good when they catch back up to you. And then when they ask you to get out of the car, one of two things are going to occur. They're either going to ask to perform a search or they're going to put some cuffs on you. They don't pull people out of cars or ask people to get out of cars to look at them these days. And at that point, you don't handle it on the street. And this is what it looks like this lady attempted to do. Now, whether she was afraid of the police or she'd had a bad experience in the past, you know, I can't say. But that's where she went wrong, by not complying. You comply, and, you know, at that point, you don't have the same thing to them. You let an attorney and a judge sort it out, you know, somewhere where he doesn't have the opportunity, he or she, meaning the police officer, to do anything detrimental, such as what occurred in this case. Now, the officer was totally wrong, firing at a van with six kids in it and a mom. I mean, she apparently was no threat to him. But, you see, that's where the human element kicks in when it comes to being a police officer. And all too often, it crosses the line and gets out of hand. She's no threat to you. She's driving away, okay? You don't chase kids on motorbikes. You don't shoot at kids on motorbikes. Why would you shoot at a mom and six kids? Sooner or later, she's going to stop, or you all are going to get her stopped again. So he was wrong. My opinion is he was fired. He should have been, because that was undue and possibly could have been deadly force. Firing at a van, you know, a mom and six kids in a van, that's ludicrous. They definitely could have apprehended her without any gunfire.
You know, Dr. Princess Aldea, you know, I remember this segment like it happened yesterday, and I think KP and I were saying, look, bottom line is we can sit here and talk about the police and the police was wrong for doing what they did, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, she's the mother of the children, you know, and as a parent, as a responsible parent, there's no way on God's green earth that, first of all, when they tried to pull over, she didn't stop, right? Then when she finally stopped, I saw the video. It looks like the cop was, you know, normal. Hey, let me see your driver's license registration and all this other stuff that she took off again. And then, you know, I'm not trying to start any trouble. I mean, I just think that we have to look at the parents in this situation and say, why would I put my children in that situation? There's no way I would do that. Now, yeah, the cops were wrong, and I hear all that nonsense. And you're right. Absolutely, the cops were wrong. But the number one priority to take care of your children, who's the number one person that's responsible for taking care of your kids? You. You don't rely on other people to take care of your children. So why would you put your kids in that situation?
Yeah, and, you know, no one knows why she did what she did. Must have been a good darn reason. I don't know. And I don't know if she thought that she could get away with it, or I don't know what was going through her mind. But I understand what you're saying. Yes, we have a responsibility to our children and to put them in that. I'm sure she knew that once she drove away, there was going to be a chase. And that was very dangerous and not a good choice. And at the same, you know, I know some people think, like, why does she always think about, I always bring out this positive side of something. And another, I'm very optimistic in most cases. And I like to invite people to consider certain things. We all think that, and we could definitely agree, that is absolutely absurd that she drove away, that she did all of that with the cop. I don't care what you've seen on the news or whatever. You know, how people are, you know, treated wrongfully in many cases. We all agreed that was it didn't look too cool. That wasn't a good, that we didn't feel that was a great choice for her. But I also say, well, we don't know what has happened. Has she been traumatized? Somebody in her family, have they been beaten by cops? Has she seen the unmerciful actions of the cops in that area? I mean, there has to have been a reason for her to do what she did, because that was serious. And if she's not mentally ill, maybe she was making the best choice that she thought she could, because she didn't know. Maybe she was driving on a suspended license and they were going to put her in jail. And she felt that was more detrimental than her taking the chance to run away because she didn't want to go to jail. I don't know. I mean, that could have been a possibility.
Yeah, you never know what happened. You know, you never know what happened in that situation. So, absolutely. It was just one of those stories that's unfortunate. And, you know, once again, it's easy for people on the outside to come to conclusions, but unless you were in the fray, it's pretty hard to determine what you would do in that situation. One of the stories we did this past year, Jerome, was a story called Mini-Me. And the caption was, President Obama, is he a mini-me of George Bush? And I remember you were very adamant during this particular topic of the show. And I think you laughed. I think when I first came to you, I think you started off with a big laugh. Am I memory serving?
I'm laughing now because I don't know where you're going. I'm like, okay.
Is my memory serving me correctly?
I'm like, okay. So I don't doubt that I probably did laugh.
Yeah, you did. Memory serves me right. You started laughing. But then we talked about some of the things. But let's talk about it for a second here because, you know, listen, I don't agree with that at all. But, you know, we had people point out some things that, you know, Barack Obama's doing and, you know, some of the things are very similar to what George Bush was doing while he was in office. So let's talk about that for a second. What are your thoughts on that particular topic?
Well, you're talking a difference between United States government policy opposed
right.
to him as an individual for president. Right, so there are big departments that are a lot of what they like to call moving parts. CIA
right.
is doing their doggone thing, right?
Mm.
They need to rein
yeah.
them fools in, but it's not like the president
yeah.
is, like, calling the shots at Homeland Security on a daily basis. Like, those guys are rogue when it comes down to it. So
right.
when you have a financial crisis like he had when he came in, and then we are talking, like, just across the board, we need to make cuts, we need to do this, and we are in crisis for dang near the first 3 years that he's there. I mean, and I mean emergency crisis. Then we get to a point where they shut the government down, and then, you know, people are reporting, is this the president's worst year ever? Like, that narrative took off, and that is ridiculous, too, right? It might be Congress's
right.
worst year ever, because even when you look at saying this is the president's lowest poll numbers, no, you want to compare that with poll numbers across the board for politicians. Congress is the lowest ever. So, of course, the president is going to go down, right? So when we start doing assessment on stuff, I don't think we look at the big picture. And when you talk about George Bush, they put a lot of stuff in place. We haven't, you know, repealed the Patriot Act, for example. So the creation of Homeland Security and their roles are totally etched in stone based upon some laws that were created before he got there. He can just manage them. The Justice Department is doing a great job of collecting money. So when somebody says, oh, he spent $1 billion on the website, they collected about $75 billion of people who they were suing, from pharmaceutical companies paying fines. Like, they collected so much money because they said, we're going to cut government waste, and they've done it. So when you get over $100 billion of money that you didn't have to spend, and then you say, well, look, they spent $1 billion over here, think about that when you start seeing what people are spending and how much money it was saved. So our budget deficit on the president's side, the annual budget, that thing is gone down every year that he's been there. So I'm just saying, like, when you compare them, it's an impression of one person opposed to the other, but you don't change as one person the culture of how departments work. You change the spirit in which they operate, because they now know they will go to jail if you commit fraud under an Obama administration, where you wouldn't under George Bush. So there was a lot more.
Absolutely. Well said. Let's bring in, looks like one of our colleagues have checked in, KP. KP, good morning. How are you? Happy holidays.
Yeah. Happy holidays to you all as well. Everybody okay?
Everybody's doing well, man.
Everybody's
keep talking. Let's see if we can figure out this audio that's going on here this morning. So now, I know you had some comments. What are your comments on this particular topic?
Well, I take it back to an analogy. Or an example of Detroit. Although it's fiction, if anybody watches that,
you're
where he was questioning, the president was questioning
KPU, yeah, your audio is not right. Let me put you on hold here real quick and see if we can get that squared away. I'm going to ask Mr. Elias to kind of work with you offline to see can we get your audio squared away, because it really didn't sound good at all. GOG, we talked about George Bush and President Obama, and we had a caption that said Mini-Me, and it was taken from the Austin Powers fame, where you had Mini-Me, and I forget the villain, but you had the big and little guy there. So let's talk about it a little bit. So talking about President Obama and George Bush, any comparisons at all?
No, if any, very little. those are two vastly different administrations. And two vastly different presidents with two vastly different management styles. If anything was even remotely similar about the two, we wouldn't see the challenges that President Obama is faced with. He would just run roughshod, pretty much like George Bush did, and he'd be getting everything. And there's no difference. Bush didn't have to deal with the boulders and the obstructions that Obama's had to deal with. If you can find a similarity between the two, it, as Jerome pointed out, a lot of that would be things that are already in place that, the president inherited. When you really look at President Obama and, all the unnecessary hurdles his administration has had to jump through and over to get even some of the most simplest legislature achieved, that makes him, that's another characteristic right there that sets him apart from George Bush. So no, I would say no, not at all.
Now, Gio, would you say the differences are black and white?
The only thing we're missing was the drum shot on that particular segment. Yeah, right. All right, looks like we may have KP's audio fixed. KP, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. Everybody hear me better now?
Yeah, you sound a lot better now. Go ahead and make your comments.
It's Prince's fault. Anyway, as I was saying, the president asked Leah's father, why did he do a certain thing, and he looked him square in the eye and said, Mr. President, that's above your pay grade. And a lot of people don't really realize what that statement actually meant, because they think, okay, he's the president of the United States, he runs everything. But like Jerome was saying, it's not like he's, putting his signature on pieces of paper that's coming out of Homeland Security every day. He doesn't go to the Social Security Administration every day and sign paperwork. So there's a lot of things of what they call, that goes along with what they call governmental inertia. And what he tries to do, what any incoming president tries to do, is put the stamp of their administration on the things that happen socially in the United States. And it's hard to stop something that's been going on for 20, 30, 40 years. It's hard to start something that you want to go on for 20, 30 years. And people just don't realize that. They think that he's the end-all of everything that happens in the United States government. You got people that's blaming the president because they're trash and not getting picked up, because there's potholes in the middle of their street in Iowa somewhere, and he has absolutely nothing to do with those things.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. And the thing is, when you look at that, and that goes back to the reason why they have cabinet members, Dr. Princess Aldea. I mean, the president can't run everything. When something goes haywire, the first thing they want to do is point to the president. Well, listen, it comes with the territory. It reminds me of a head coach of a football team. Hey, look, all the head coach can do is put things in place. The players have to play. And the bottom line is that if they don't get their act together, 9 times out of 10, if the team loses, the coaches usually get fired when the players are the ones that are really not, performing up to their capabilities. And you can look at it pretty much the same way when you talk about government office. He has cabinet members. You have a Secretary of Defense. You have a Secretary of Human and Health Administration Services. You have all these different people in place. Why is it that people want to look at the president and say, look, the buck stops with you, bucko. If it ain't right, we're coming after you.
Well, because it makes sense in the whole idea of political theater. It makes sense in, I believe, and I don't like to talk about the race thing, but race in conjunction with the fact that he played the game way different than any other president ever did, He didn't come in as a yes man. He came in taking charge, making the decision of what he wanted to do, implementing it, and even on record being noted as being one of the most successful presidents in terms of his accomplishments. So, I mean, hey, there you have it. I mean, this is, but it's unfortunate, though, that he has a team that is not a team with him. They don't support him. They try to kill everything that he puts in front of them. So, like I said earlier, recently, the GOP, I believe they're losing some of their fans because it is quite clear that they are against him, and it's a personal thing. So, and it's not, they're not for the people. So, hey, this is what we, this is the result. Yes, you know, they were going to blame President Barack Obama. That's what they've been doing the whole time. And now that he's serving his second term, kudos to him. Hey, nothing has changed. Except now that you're starting to see the results of a lot of the things that he strategically put in place. We're starting to see it.
Yeah. You know, speaking of which, you know, we talk about the president and the fact that he has to delegate authority because there's no way he can run the country. Just one person, everything just can't come to him. You have people in place to approve and disapprove things. And like Jerome mentioned earlier, you know, the CIA, those guys are out of control. They're doing what the hell they want to do. Here's a soundbite of a particular situation that happened during the president's watch. Let's listen, and we'll talk on the other side.
Exactly 8 months after the deadly attack in Benghazi that killed Ambassador Chris Stevens and three others, leaked emails reveal the Obama administration was more involved than initially stated in watering down the now widely discredited talking points.
It makes it look like they're trying to hide something, whether or not they are.
The emails show 12 separate drafts of those talking points, the CIA's first version blaming the incident on protests in Cairo over an anti-Islamic video, and noting we do know that Islamic extremists with ties to Al-Qaeda participated in the attack. The initial text also made reference to five other attacks against foreign interests in Benghazi. That language raised red flags at the State Department, where then-spokesperson Victoria Nuland emailed that the mention of prior attacks, quote, could be abused by members of Congress to beat the State Department for not paying attention to agency warnings. So why would we want to feed that either? Concerned. At White House meetings the following day, other officials further diluted the language, eliminating the references to terrorism and previous attacks. That Sunday, UN Ambassador Susan Rice followed the talking points on all five talk shows.
What happened in Benghazi was, in fact, initially a spontaneous reaction to what had just transpired hours before in Cairo.
Once that assessment was discounted, the White House insisted it had only changed one word, and on Friday stood by its story.
The CIA was the agency that made changes to the edits to the talking points and then produced the talking points.
A thorny issue for the Obama administration, and analysts say perhaps a larger problem for former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, said to be eyeing a possible presidential bid in 2016.
It strikes me that she had a political problem with Benghazi before these emails, which is, it happened on her watch.
The White House argues that Republicans are trying to politicize this issue. They insist that it was only national security staff, Lester, that was involved in being a part of the input on those talking points, not political advisors to the president.
Well, Jerome, let's start with you. I mean, you know, that's something that the Republicans continue to pounce on. They keep trying to have hearings on Benghazi, and it's unfortunate that Ambassador Stevens and others lost their lives during that attack. But, you know, the Republicans, why won't they let this go? I mean, but here's the question. Is it a legitimate reason why they continue to try to have hearings on Benghazi?
Because they need to create scandal, right? And so whatever little bit they get, I mean, if you saw what happened to the 60 Minutes folks, and I want to say this when it comes to this, 60 Minutes did a piece on Benghazi where they knew that the guy was lying. Now, 60 Minutes is supposed to be credible to all of us. And I'm here to remind you that during George Bush's term, I think it was Helen Thomas from UPI who passed away, she said, as a liberal, we did not do a good enough job scrutinizing George Bush because they were threatening those guys across the board. So now the media feels like they need to make up for this, and they're creating controversy under President Bush, I mean, under President Obama, which they never did under Bush. And so in comparison, I just want to say this. When you think about the roles or how government was running during the Bush administration, Dick Cheney is not a process. He was more of a process guy, right? So he was dealing with the CIA. He was dealing with the FBI. They were orchestrating that. That's why when Colin Powell said, my talking points, you guys had me in front of the UN saying all this stuff that you knew wasn't true, George Bush knew what they were doing to Colin Powell. At the same time, Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, is the first vice president that was a senator. And you know, the vice president's role is to run the Senate. That's the only constitutional role that they actually have. So President Obama gave Joe Biden a lot more responsibility. Joe Biden is not manhandling the intelligence guys because that's not what they do. They're not creating war. So under Bush, Cheney was a war guy, you know, trying to get, you know, all the contractors' money, you know, that kind of stuff, the military stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what they handled. On the president's administration, they are trying to do more process stuff. And like was said before, we won't see the value of this president until long after he's gone, because even the $5 billion that they set aside about 2-3 years ago to feed for school lunch and to feed people in impoverished areas in this country, you won't even notice that until he's gone, because they won't approve. The money is already set aside. It's there. They saved that money, and it's there, but you won't see it until after he's gone. I guarantee it.
You know, GOG, let me go to you on this. Now, let's talk about this just on the surface, okay? Now, because I know, listen, there are a lot of things that are going on. The undercurrent is hell of a, and a lot of people that are in the know that, you know, there were no big issues. But, you know, as you heard in that report, it talked about some of the emails that were found after the fact. And let's just switch gears here. Let's say that George Bush was the president in this situation. Don't you think people would be like, okay, what is up with this? You know, you go on all these Sunday shows and you say one thing, but now we're finding out that it was completely different, that you guys knew more, and that you stuck to some talking points. I mean, are we being fair here?
No, I don't think so. And I don't think that we would still be hearing as much about Benghazi as we're hearing now if it was George Bush that we were talking about here, or the Bush administration. I think I agree with Jerome. I believe that they're trying to get a story, or trying to make a story out of one that really is no longer there. And this is being targeted to, again, the uninformed or the detached political people or voters out there, if you would. You've got somebody right now that is, you know, continuously hearing that, a group of people that are continuously hearing that. They have no idea where Benghazi is. They have no idea what occurred, except some people got killed, and it was some of our own people. And the buck stops there for them. You know, it's often said, if you push something long enough, if you tell a person something long enough, you keep repeating it, especially if they don't do any research, they'll start believing it. So you've got a percentage of people out there right now that, didn't we kill somebody in, what's that place? The Obama administration, they're a bunch of killers. They don't know what they're doing. They're going around killing their own people, and then they're lying about it. And, you know, unfortunately, the media is perpetrating this. You know, they're the ones putting the message out. Good point again, Jerome, about 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes, who used to be one of the most creditable programs out there. I've noticed since Obama has been in office, has slowly but surely degraded in the content that they deliver, and the the level and the honesty that they deliver it in. It's paid. It's screwed. I mean, they're starting. You want to talk about things that look similar? They're starting to look real similar to what I call Fox News, and I didn't say Fox, so don't. I said FAUX.
It sounds similar.
Yep, it's all similar. So I think it's you know, they're trying to get a story. They're trying to make a story that's no longer there.
Can I make a point?
Absolutely. I was coming to you, KP. Before you make your point, let me ask you a question, and sure. Then you can make your point. But I hopefully you can answer my question. All right, let's go back to. But let's talk about Benghazi. All right. look at what happened in Benghazi. Once again, you had a person that went in front of all the media and said one thing, and then just rewind back to the war in Iraq. I mean, I'm pretty sure now, outside of the fact that there were more people killed in those wars, I understand that. But just on the surface, look at the situations. Is there a difference here? Because, you know, you had President Bush and those guys that knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction, at least that's what they're telling us. And then, according to reports, the Obama administration knew more about the attacks than they originally put out there to the press. Is there a difference?
There's a big difference. And the bigger difference is in what would have happened, what the aftermath would have been of the Bush. Bush would have dropped a bomb on somebody and everybody would have cheered him on. He'd have stood in front of a banner that said mission accomplished, and everybody would have forgot about it the next day.
Yeah.
Because the media was not near, and Congress was not nearly as rabid about pursuing him as they are about President Obama, which is basically to deny his legacy. They couldn't beat him at the ballot box, so now let's deny him the history books. That's what it seems like to me. But my question is this, or my statement is this. There was an article in the New York Times just yesterday about Benghazi. Guess what?
Mm-hmm. What?
The whole tie to Al-Qaeda that everybody in the Senate is screaming about, and everybody want to pull somebody in front of this committee or that subcommittee or what have you, was based upon one guy making one phone call to one guy in Africa that had some possible Al-Qaeda ties. Come to find out that Benghazi was about the video. It had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. The New York Times has been researching this. I think I read it. It was like an 8 or 9 month investigation where they went to everybody that they could find that witnessed that or that was involved in that, and they could find absolutely no ties to Al-Qaeda. So come to find out that the original report that Susan Rice went on the Talking Heads show that Sunday was actually correct, and that President Obama made his mistake was in backtracking and trying to, and I understand that, you know, the election was coming up. Let's keep this camp down because we don't want this to become an issue with the election, which in hindsight was actually the better route if he wanted to get reelected. But come to find out that it was about that video, and it had nothing to do with organized terrorism. And this coming out of the New York Times, which is, you know, that's the gray lady. That's one of their, when I say they, I mean the conservative, some progressive groups. That's their go-to news source. If the New York Times, it's not like picking up, you know, an Inquirer at the checkout aisle at Walmart, because they not getting ready to get out there and say something that they haven't thoroughly researched. They wrong from here to there, and, you know, time to time they might put something out there that's crazy, but for the most part, you can count on them. And they talked, and they made reference to 60 Minutes, and they talked about how 60 Minutes got it wrong for trusting that guy who they knew was lying in the first place. Go back and read that. It just came out yesterday. It's like 18, 19 pages long.
Wow. That's good information. You're in tune to the Serious Side. It's 36 minutes after the hour. The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, our 2013 year in review. Every year we, at this time, the last Sunday of the year, we sit back and we talk about things that are, we discuss topics and segments that we had discussed during the year, during the course of the 12 months. And here's another one that we talked about. Let's listen and we'll talk on the other side.
Five weeks after giving birth to twin boys, Deborah LaFay, now 31 years old, walked into court to ask a judge to end her probation 4 years early. The former Greco middle school teacher pleaded guilty to having sex with the student in 2005. She received 3 years house arrest and 7 years probation. In court, her attorney argued that she has been a model citizen for 6 years and deserves a break.
It's hard to have a life with a family and where you're home every night at 10 o'clock.
The reason she needs to stay on there is because she doesn't like it, doesn't want to do it. It is the punishment she's getting, so she needs to continue to receive that punishment.
State Attorney Mike Sinecor told the judge letting LaFave off early would be a slap in the face to the victim and his family.
The victim was under an intense amount of pressure and a great deal of anxiety about the trial and what that would do to him. and his mom understandably shared that, and they asked us to enter an agreement.
Sinacor says the 14-year-old victim okayed the plea to avoid the publicity of a trial. He also pointed out that the plea stated there would be no early termination of probation, a term the judge decided to ignore.
It's giving weight to what the normal procedure is in these courts. Ms. Fitzgibbons, I'm going to grant your motion.
Well, you know, we touched on this last Sunday, actually. We originally brought the story to you back in January, one of the first stories we did of 2013, this particular story of this, once again, blue-eyed, blonde-haired female slept with this guy, this little young boy, and as you heard in that sound clip, she was on 3 years house arrest, and because the judge decided he went against the norm and granted the notion to allow her to be able to do the things basically she wanted to do. I mean, GOG... the hypocrisy of this type of behavior is off the chain. It just, you know what, man, it just bothers me to my center when you hear about this type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because had that been a black female, because there was a black female who beat up a student here in Houston, she didn't get no 3 years probation, house arrest. You know, if it had been a man, it would have been a whole different ball game. I'm just so tired of these white females that are pretty getting off with some of the sleeping with an underage. What if a man had done that? What if a man had slept with a 13 or a 14-year-old girl? They kill him. They try to castrate him.
You're absolutely right. He would have been labeled a pedophile and locked away for, oh boy, who knows how long. But here again, you know, because of... she's a lady, and the society that we live in...
A white lady.
And in this particular instance, number one, justice got mitigated down from Jump Street, and then on the back end of it, they want to look, apparently, you know, just kick it out altogether. And it's an atrocity. I mean, you're talking a kid here, you know, that this lady... She did the same thing as a pedophile would do. Let's just call it what it is. But for some reason, our culture and our society can't seem to tag a lady with that. You're right. If it had been a guy, totally different ballgame. Number one, what is this craziness, 3 years house arrest? Who gets 3 years house arrest? You get 3 years locked up when you, you know, you violate a child. So, you know, here again, it's because she's a white female that she's getting this kind of ride. And it's... if you look around, you see cases of this all over the place. It's been happening, you know, before her, and it's not going to change going forward.
No, it's not going to change. You know, and Dr. Princess O'Dea, one of the things you talk about is mental health and people who are mentally unstable. And, you know, you always like to try to find a positive out of a story. I challenge you to find a positive with this story. Do you even have Dr. Princess O'Dea? Where Mike's over.
Yeah, she's here.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with her. Put her on mute. Sounds like Jerome wanted to get in. Go ahead, Jerome.
Yeah. You know, and I thought about, remember we talked about this last time, about, you know, we have some more stories, at least about three or four of them. I was thinking about putting them in the segment next segment, but since there's a lot more stuff, I wasn't going to talk about it. But you have a Pennsylvania high school teacher, Lauren Harrington Cooper, 31, having sex with a male student. You have a school psychologist in South Carolina, 28, Megan Snipes, sex with a 16-year-old. And and although, you know, we have this is like that whole affluenza kind of, you know, defense that white folks are having. It's like they can't be dangerous enough to put in jail. And they're nice looking, you know, white females, and they just can't find themselves to sentence them to jail for any of this stuff. I mean, it has to do with the judges saying that if I was a 16-year-old, I can see why I would, you know what I mean? Like, they're justifying
exactly.
The other way.
No, you okay?
What's that?
I don't turn the mic off, Ms. Elliott. I'm not sure what
she's
doing.
Yeah, and on top of that, you just have a culture, and again, I see at least about 5-6 stories a week, just generally, and I don't even look for them, of white female teachers sleeping with their students, and we're watching them just get out of the court system with probation and supervised whatever, and they're married. The last one was married with three children, and she slept with the students in the back of the car at school. I mean, it was just kind of, you know what I mean? And they said they had an affair for, they didn't call it an affair, but they said she had sex with him for, I think, about 4 or 5 months, and the child's parents found sexually explicit text messages. So this is an affluentist situation because they're finding the stuff on text messages and on social media, whereas I bet you a lot of that underground stuff that's happening is just because they're not leaving a paper trail. But I can't imagine what the real numbers are on this. These are the ones that's getting caught.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I know, you know, how we have, you know, how I'm very passionate about missing children of color. I know when you find these types of stories, you are on top of them. So I definitely knew that you would definitely have statistics ready and available to spit those out. Mr. Elias,
Well, honestly, I ignore them. They're so frequent, I ignore them. Right?
Right.
And my point is just that we cover despair and inequities and negative stuff on black people all day that they don't cover in major media, the stories that are happening in their community. Like, somebody got caught yesterday with a crystal meth mobile lab, and I watched the news story, and I just kind of laughed and kept going. That's the number one drug in this country being consumed is crystal meth. But you never see white folks do stories on that.
No. No, you're right about that. You're absolutely correct about that. Mr. Elias, man, let me get your thoughts on this, because I know that you're passionate about this as well. You know, but it goes back to what we talked about. It's that male thing, because, you know, like Jerome said, or GLG, one of them said, look, the judge could be saying, yeah, you know, hey, if I was that age, maybe, you know, hey, that's a fine-looking little thing there. You know, why should we penalize this young fellow for, you know, doing something I wish I could have done as a 16-year-old boy? Because we all know when we were all young men and, you know, we had teachers that we fantasized about.
Hmm.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this, Mr. Elias?
Have we fantasized about him? I actually remember my teacher's name. Her name was Miss Sickage, man. She was hot. But the bottom line is, man, you are breaking the law, man. The law is the law, man. Hell, you know, you're sleeping with a 16-year-old boy, man. You know, wow. I just don't get it, man. I don't get it. You know, back when I was in school, it never happened. You know, it never ran rampant like it did. But then again, you know, you never had that many young teachers. All our teachers were older and seasoned ladies, so, you know. But now that you got the younger teachers there, man, that's probably a vast amount of why it's happening, man. So, you know, if it was my son, I would probably be really upset, man. But, you know,
I don't know, Miss Elias. Your answer made me think that. Were you guys thinking the same thing I was thinking?
Yeah.
Your answers sound like you regret that you weren't going to school during this time. It's, you know, I mean,
you feel a little empathy for.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I wasn't the only one then. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, Miss Elias, you know, listen to what you're saying, brother. You sound like.
I disagree with Les. I won't say that for the record. I just want
for old battle axes.
I'm a guy, so. No, I'm controlling about 16, 15.
Yeah, you know, I translated that as, you know, I wish I had the opportunity, but we had some old ugly women, and, you know, okay, all right. I'm joking with you, Mr. Les. KP, man, give me your thoughts on this, KP.
You know, and it's funny, too, because it's like the confluence of a lot of different factors. The main one being, you know, in immortal words, James Brown, it's a man's world. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And in this patriarchal society that we see, and we don't look at female on male, you know, pedophilia, especially, you know, in a school setting, we don't look at that quite the same way we look at, say, you know, a male teacher and a 14-year-old girl. Because we have a tendency to think that as a male, we're not supposed to cry, we're not supposed to tell, we're supposed to be strong in all, you know, situations. You're the football player, you this, you that. You see what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard for us to wrap our mind around the fact that this is rape. You see what I'm saying? Regardless of whether or not he went for it, he's Randy, he's, you know, the average horny little teenager, whatever, but it's still, in the eyes of the law, rape. So we're not going to look at it quite like that, which is why you end up seeing, you know, the pretty blonde-haired, blue-eyed, little, you know, sweet-looking little teacher thing, you know, get off on probation. Because the courts have a hard time, and society as well has a hard time of seeing that as what it is, which is basically taking something from that young boy that he can't never get back, which is his innocence. You see what I'm saying? And it also plays into another, you know, thing that we got in America, not even amongst us. I mean, because you got to ask yourself honestly, if your 16-year-old daughter, if you went on her phone and you saw some, you know, sexually explicit texts from her teacher and you come to find out that maybe she was sleeping with her science teacher or the drama teacher or the coach or what have you, you're going to hit the roof. You're going to be ready to get your gun, go down there, shoot him in the face.
He's right.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you for a fact that if that happened with me, GOG would be hosting a serious side. I won't be nowhere to be found. I'd be in jail.
You see what I'm saying?
I'll tell you that now.
And out if it was our son, we might shoot him in the leg. You see what I'm saying? But that's being real. Then we're going to look at it just a little bit differently because we always figured, you know, where she couldn't hold him down, she had to give it to him. And, you know, getting to what GOG said, yeah, that was probably going on back when we were kids too. But there was no paper trail. There was no, you know, you couldn't look in somebody's phone and see a text message. You see what I'm saying? So it came down to basically her word against his. You see what I'm saying? Even if he did actually report it. So I'm thinking it was probably going on. It's just that it wasn't much scrutiny about.
KP took my next point. I was going to say, you know, the males on this panel, not excluding the doctor, but if we, because I was sitting there thinking about this, Jay, all the males on this panel, and KP just pretty much put it out there, and he called me out when he did it, okay? If our daughter came home and, you know, she was sleeping with the science teacher, as KP said, we're going to have, let me speak for myself, I'm going to have a totally different reaction than I would if my 16-year-old son came in and told me he was sleeping with his science teacher, and, you know, you see this teacher, and she looks like she's got the body of a pinky, and, you know, I'm making this point to say that, you know, I say, you know, it's a cultural thing, but I think we all, you know, are affected by it. It's a totally different reaction. You know, I'm going to blow the male teacher away for touching my little girl. That's just the way it is, okay? This female teacher that slept with my 16-year-old son, well, son, I'm going to talk to this lady. It's a totally different thing.
That's true. Okay, first of all, I hear what you guys are saying as far as back in the day, and this is a topic that one of the topics we're going to probably talk about coming up in the next coming year. I'm going to try to get my mother on because she's a retired educator. You know, educators back in the day were completely different from educators that are in the here and now. I mean, back in the day, to me, educators knew exactly what was going on. They knew their topics. They were very smart people. Today, hey, you go through some type of orientation course, you get whatever you need to get, some type of certification, you're a teacher. And I think that in today's society, you have so many young teachers, you have so many situations where you have adults allowing kids to call them by their first names. I just think it's a different time. And I don't think that probably, you know, did it happen? Maybe it did, but I'm telling you, I don't think it would be nowhere. If we could magically pull those facts up, I guarantee you that it would be nowhere near to what's going on nowadays. There's just no way. Our teachers had too much class and too much, you know, they were standout citizens in the community, just like police officers back in the day. You know, it's just a whole different time that we live in. Generation X is something completely different that we've never seen before. Dr. Princess, I'll do your thoughts.
Okay, you know what? They did it back then too, Jay.
I just said that, but I'm telling you, I don't think it was as prevalent as it is now. You're not going to make me believe that because I just know my teachers.
I believe that it was, and maybe even more so because now we have, you know, I think we get it twisted. We are living in a social media society, internet world.
We weren't back then, though.
Not like this. Come on, Jay. You know that. Come
back
on.
Then, we weren't.
Now,
I'm
now
saying we weren't
Google.
Back then, Dr. Princess O'Dea. That's all I'm saying to you. We weren't living in a social media back then. It didn't exist.
Exactly. And that's why you didn't know of as much as you know now. That's why you didn't hear it as much then as you hear it now. Because now global news is at your fingertips. Google it. You know, so to say that it's so different now, no, I don't think so. I think that some people may take a second guess before making certain choices just on fear, just out of fear that somebody could post it or see it, or there could be a text scandal or a video or whatever. I think that some people may make another choice as a result of the technology and the social media. So I believe that it was there. It was back then. Come on, man. Just like, I mean, that's just to say the sexual assaults that go on within families, uncles and nieces and all this kind of crap. Come on. It was very prevalent. Has always been prevalent. We don't talk about it that much, but it's very prevalent, you know. So the same thing over here. Come on. Let's keep it real.
All right, well, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on that. Here's one more soundbite that we talked about, another topic that we talked about this past year. Just listen in, and we'll talk on the other side.
Robert Brown is an accomplished actor, most notably on the HBO series Tremé. But while shopping for a present for his mother at Macy's, he says he was slapped in handcuffs and told he was a thief.
They just knew my card was fake. And you're going to jail. That's what I kept hearing. We do this all the time. Your card is fake. You're going to jail.
Brown's accusations come just days after two other African Americans came forward describing similar experiences at another store in Manhattan, Barney's.
Very embarrassing. Very.
In April, 19-year-old Trayon Christian was confronted after buying an expensive belt.
Undercover cops on the left side that had regular clothes on stopped me from the left side and asked me like, oh, I just got a call from Barney saying your card is not real.
But his card was valid, as was Kayla Phillips last February when police stopped her after she bought a $2,500 handbag.
It made me feel so low, like I didn't deserve to shop there.
Rapper and entrepreneur Jay-Z has business deals with both Barney's and Macy's. Macy's carries his Rockaware clothing line. Barney's will debut a limited collection of his designs next month. They range from a $675 raincoat to a $33,000 watch. Jay-Z, who was born in Brooklyn with the name Sean Carter, pledged some of the profits to charity. He has boycotted companies he says were racist in the past, including Cristal Champagne. The hip-hop star, currently on tour in Europe, has not commented on these recent incidents. But thousands of his fans have signed an online petition asking him to sever ties to Barney's.
It doesn't surprise me.
It was started by lifelong Jay-Z fan Derek Bowers.
You can't deny what's happening here. You know, he's the face of hip-hop culture, and when we regular folks who don't have the money or clout walk in and we can't get service, then what's the point?
You want it to be more than just business and money.
It has to be more than business and money. It has to be.
Barney says it's reviewing its policies. Macy says it is investigating the incident. All three shoppers say they plan to sue. Don Daler, CBS News, New York.
In a written statement, Jay-Z says he's waiting until a meeting between community leaders and Barney's before commenting, but that the collaboration with the store benefits his charitable foundation, and he doesn't profit.
Right, he doesn't profit. All right, real quick here, because I know we're running against it. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, it's on a need-to-know basis with Jerome Esprit. We definitely have to get to that segment. Obviously, when you're trying to cram everything that we've talked about or some of the highlights that we've talked about in the last 12 months into a two-hour segment, it's tough to do. So let's get some real quick comments on this particular situation. First of all, an update. Anybody has any information, an update on this particular story?
I can give you a quick update on it.
Jay-Z
came in and said that he wanted to sit on the committee that was overseeing the investigation on Barney's side. Barney's canceled his fundraiser. And I don't know, they made some changes, Al Sharpton and the Action Network, National Action Network, and some other organizations came in. And Barney's, Macy's, Lord & Taylor's, and a few other stores agreed to post new policies on employees and racial profiling. So they did a really good job as far as the civil rights organizations but I don't think they updated the story enough to say what Jay-Z did. Jay-Z changed his stance of not looking at what was going on, and he took a stand and said, I will only do this if I can sit on the committee to oversee the investigation on what happened internally to Barney's. But Barney's did cancel his fundraiser after he did that. So good job to Jay-Z. I would criticize him like everybody else, but he did step up to the plate once he found out.
Sounds like he did. All right, let me get real quick comments from everyone. Gio, your comments on this.
You know, it's unfortunate that it took a high-profile person to bring this to the light, because it's something that's been going on, you know, forever. And, you know, hats off to Jay-Z and everybody that was involved in this to get Barney's and to change their policy and look at it. But the rest of America, it's not going to change. And trust me, I'm speaking from experience.
Wow. KP, real quick comment on this. You have KP? All right, not a problem. Dr. Princess, I'll do a real quick comment on this story.
I want to say kudos to Jay-Z for stepping up, taking a stand, and that should be a note for all of us. That's all it takes sometimes, is for us to take a stand, and I'm very proud of him for doing that. And I'm not going to say that it's not going to change. I'm going to say that we have the vision that there will be change, so that we can see it, you know, not just in Barney, but everywhere.
Cool. All right. Looks like we have KP now. KP, real quick comment on the story.
It's not really going to make any difference whatsoever. Jay-Z doesn't make them enough money. You see what I'm saying? Because they really don't care. If they update the policies, does that mean the people are going to stop being profiled? No, people are getting profiled, not only in big names. So you can go to Walmart and get profiled. You can go to Sears and get profiled. It means absolutely, positively nothing in the overall scheme of things.
Well, well said. All right, Mr. Elias, man, real quick thought on this particular topic.
Well, like I said, man, if we, you know, there's power in the dollar, man. So, hey, stop shopping at these stores. Stop taking your money there. If you stop taking your money there, they'll have to bend rules. Spend your money in your own community.
Absolutely. All right, folks, listen, that is it for our review of some of the topics that we discussed. But look, real quick, before we go, it's coming up. I'm not sure if we can get football picks in, but we definitely want to make sure we get Jerome in. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Murphy, związany z dalszym rozwojem województwa i kraju.
The week that was in the news.
All right, folks, it's time for, before we go, a quick look at stories that made headlines. Of course, made headlines this past year. One story that we did talk about this morning, take an opportunity to talk about it right now, the Zimmerman trial. You know, GOG, when that guy was found not guilty, I thought, boy, we were going to have a race riot on our hands. Your thoughts?
I did, too. I thought all hell was going to break loose. And, you know, hey, if that there's one that got away with murder.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Absolutely. That guy should be locked up and should be in jail right now. Mr. Elias, your thoughts on that? Let me have the mic open. Mr. Elias. Let me go to KP.
Hello.
While we're waiting on Mr. Elias. Oh, okay, he's back. Yes, Mr. Elias, what are your thoughts on the Zimmerman trial, man?
Well, I thought all along he was going to get off, man. But, you know, hey, man, especially when that prosecutor came out and smiled like she did, man. Look, bottom line is, guy, like GOG said, got away with murder. And we made excuses why he, you know, he felt the way he did. Look, he shot a kid that he approached. He should have rotten hell forever.
Yeah, Jerome, do you think there will ever be justice served on this guy?
Oh, on Zimmerman?
Yeah.
No. Hey, I thought you were going to say justice served when black people get killed. I was still going to say no. So for both those questions, no. And I didn't think it was going to be any race riots either, but.
Well, I thought that hopefully the Attorney General will be able to bring civil rights things up against this guy. I mean, it just seems to me something got violated. Hopefully
it usually takes
happen.
A couple years. Yeah, it usually takes a couple of years before they bring civil rights charges against someone, but I think they have a really good case, and hopefully when it kicks in, there won't be race riots amongst white folks.
Okay. Wow. KP, Paula Deen.
What about it?
one of the main stories of this past year, brother.
Who?
Okay, I get it. All right. Dr. Princess O'D, let me ask you. You like to try to find a silver lining in these stories. Can you find one in the Paula Deen situation?
Yes, I can. There's
oh, my goodness. I can't wait to hear it.
Yes, there's so much opportunity for transformation on all kinds of levels with this one here. Okay, you have a young lady. She's cooking all the greasy foods and all this stuff, and she's got diabetes herself. Then you find out later that she's talking about she's got the racial content going
okay, okay,
on.
Okay,
in
okay,
her
okay. Got to speed it
okay.
up. We only have a few minutes here.
Okay, so yes, I think it's an opportunity, first of all, for us not to judge her, and also an opportunity for her to transform and her to realize that, you know,
yeah.
hey,
yeah.
you have to practice what you have to practice what you preach. And
okay.
Also, I think it's an opportunity for us to see. Oh, one more thing.
Yes,
I think it's
an opportunity
for us to see. An opportunity for us not to.
Okay, okay, we got to move on. We got
to
move on. Sorry, I got to cut you off. We don't have that kind of time. Thank you, Dr. Princess Aldea. All right, Obamacare, Ms. Jerome, Obamacare.
Yeah. All right. Paula Deen's still crazy. Obamacare has been misrepresented, and it's just like everything, just like the political election season. If you listen to a lie long enough, you'll almost start to believe it. It's like believing Mitt Romney cared about poor people.
Oh, look at you. All right, Jill, Jim, coming at you with this one. Nelson Mandela, the death of Nelson Mandela.
His legacy and the things that he did in regards to apartheid and racism, especially South Africa, I hope that they continue to live on. We lost the big one there.
Yeah, absolutely. KP, man, what about this Jody Arish story, man? That's the number one news story from this past year, according to Yahoo. Your thoughts on that particular trial and what happened there?
One of the best laughs that I ever had in my life. She said on 60 Minutes that she just wanted to go to prison and teach people about love through her artwork. Holla at you.
That is funny. Oh, my God. All right, Dr. Princess O'D, last one, the Roe baby. What do you think about that? That happened this past year. Your thoughts?
The what? Say that one more time.
The royal baby.
Oh, the royal baby. Yes, yes. I think it's beautiful, and I love how authentic they are. The couple
I love how they have transitioned from the traditional way of being the prince, and along what they're doing with their family. I just
Okay, we have to go.
Sorry, we have to go. We have to give Jerome at least needs 10 minutes for his segment, so we have to go. All right, folks, coming up next, Jesus Christ, Dr. President, you make me laugh every time I think of you. All right, look, on a need-to-know basis is coming up next, but first here is our final edition of Have You Seen Me for 2013.
Sir? Have you seen this girl?
Hello, friends. I'm Jay, the host of The Jay Rouse Show and the serious side of The Jay Rouse Show. And it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me? Where we put the spotlight on missing children of color. We're heading to New Orleans. New Orleans police are seeking 18-year-old Chanel Bingham, who was last seen on Sunday, December 15th, at her residence in the 1500 block of Cloute Street. And let me spell that for you. That's C-L-O-U-E-T. Bingham's mother has become increasingly concerned of her daughter's whereabouts, police said in a news release. Bingham was supposed to be going to a second-line parade in the 9th Ward when she left home, police said. Her family has not seen or heard from her since. Bingham is described as 5'3", weighing approximately 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing a red and plaid long-sleeved shirt, gray jeans, and red and white tennis shoes. She also has a multicolored twist hairstyle. Police ask anyone with information on Bingham's whereabouts, please call the New Orleans Police Department at 504-821-821. 2222. Once again, that number is 504-821-2222. We pray for the safe return of this beautiful young lady. We pray for her family during this most difficult time. If you know of anyone who you'd like to see featured on Have You Seen Me, all you have to do is contact the show. Pick up the phone right now if you're listening to a live broadcast and dial 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. Leave the information there, or you can go to our Facebook page and post the information on our TGRS Radio Network Facebook page, or you can contact me direct at J-A-Y-R-I-L, that's J Ryle. Leave me a message and I'll be sure to contact you, or you can email us at the J Ryle Show at live.com. That's the J-R-I-L Show at live.com. We pray for all people missing, regardless of color. And until next time, you've been listening to Have You Seen Me, where we focus our attention on missing people of color. Take care.
Somewhere in America, a mother is crying.
A family is torn.
A child is lost,
missing, or even abducted.
We need your help.
Contact your local police station for a listing of missing children in your area,
or log on to www.missingkids.com.
To obtain further information regarding missing children in your local community.
What is the next face you see?
Maybe a child that will need your help.
Help support America's missing!
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
The White House petition website has been bombarded by a series of succession requests.
The White House says the scandal involving former CIA Director David Price and General John Allen was a surprise to the president.
All right, folks, it's time for, before we go, a quick look at some, on a need-to-know basis, Jerome is free. Jerome, floor is yours.
All right, so here's a quickly weekly news flash from Esprinet News. This is what we did this week. New data shows that in a number of areas, teenage pregnancy, violent crime, and increased graduation rate amongst black youth have made significant gains, experts say, It's time that the perception matches the reality. The national teen pregnancy rate peaked in the 1990s and have been falling ever since. Black people are down 51% from the 90s in teenage pregnancy. So let that myth go. Yeah. Merrill Lynch will pay $132 million to settle charges of misrepresenting debt to the SEC, and a New York brokers firm will pay another $819,000 to settle charges that it aided and abetted future or failure to disclose rebates. So they are paying the SEC. So stop acting like the Obama administration is collecting money, because they are. Now,
thank you.
According to the Freedom of Information Act, FBI officials have authorized informants to break the law at least 5,939 times since 2012. Crimes range from bullying, selling drugs, and planning robberies, and the agents authorized an average of 15 a day.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I thought that would be interesting, because the FBI is the only agency that keeps track of their informants like that. So the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, none of those guys keep records, but the FBI keeps records, and almost 6,000 approvals for people breaking the law happened in 2012.
Wow. Wow.
Yep. All right, in our white female news, the female CEO... Female CEO of Archie Comics has been accused of harassing five employees, saying she can't be guilty of sexual harassment because their employees are white males. So she argued in her filings that they're a protected class of people, therefore their harassments aren't legally viable. So she repeatedly yelled in the office, calling them penises, and instead of calling them their names, she called them by their male genitalia.
That's the place I like to work. That's a different topic for a different day.
hey, can you... that's nothing but a cartoon up in that piece. All right, so in our other white female news, a woman was restrained on JetBlue by a JetBlue crew on Christmas Eve because they wouldn't give her another drink. Now, Tris Senate 39... said she was just trying to get back to her seat when she attacked, when she says the crew attacked her, but she scratched the pilot while the flight was in air.
The pilot?
And, they actually came out to restrain her. The pilot came out while they were on autopilot and tried to restrain her. So she goes to court, and she said, showed the judge the bruises on her arms, and he said, you're going to have to save this your trial. But they released her on $1,000 bail.
Wow.
Because you know we had been in jail for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was in the air after 9/11.
They exactly.
got $1,000 bail and they let it go.
Ridiculous.
All right.
All right, man. You have one more for me.
Okay. In superstar news, we know that Beyonce, broke all of these records. 800,000 downloads on the first 3 days. It's looking to be her biggest selling album ever. And since Target and Amazon... did not want to sell her albums or her CDs. Guess what happened to Target right after that? The credit card spam. Beyonce fans play. See, that's all I want to say. You target her, Target got targeted. I just want to say that.
Oh, my goodness. All right. All right, man. Appreciate it. All right, folks. We'll be back with our final thoughts after this. Last ones for 2013. Don't go nowhere.
Police in southern Russia put the number of dead in today's bombing of a train station to at least 13, but NPR's Corey Flintoff reports the toll is still rising.
Emergency officials say a bomb went off near metal detectors at the entrance to the station in the city of Volgograd. Russia's National Anti-Terrorism Committee issued a statement saying the attack was believed to have been carried out by a female suicide bomber. In October, a suicide bomb attack by a woman killed 7 people on a bus in the same city. No group has claimed responsibility for the bombing, but similar attacks have been linked to Islamic separatists in the nearby region of Dagestan. Authorities fear that terrorist attacks in the region will discourage international sports fans from coming to the Winter Olympics in Sochi. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Moscow.
Director General of the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog is urging Syria to consider all possible options in moving its most dangerous stockpile. Syria is due to send the chemicals to the port at Latakia. BBC's Anna Holligan is sailing on a Norwegian ship, which is due to pick up the weapons by Tuesday's deadline.
The international community is poised and ready to assist, but it's up to the Syrian authorities to mitigate the risks involved in transporting the chemicals from their current locations around Damascus and Latakia. In a statement, Mr. Azimtu said that despite the practical challenges, virtually all of the logistical and security assets are now in place.
The BBC's Anna Holligan sailing on the Mediterranean Sea. It's not immediately clear who fired the rockets that struck northern Israel today. They didn't cause any injuries or damage, but Israel responded with artillery fire toward the source of the launch in southern Lebanon. The exchange of fire comes as Lebanon observes a day of mourning for Mohammed Shatta. Shatta was killed in Friday's car bombing in central Beirut. The attack also killed at least five other people and injured scores. Shatta's funeral was today at a mosque in downtown Beirut. A North Sea ferry has been forced to return to northern England shortly after departure because of a fire. British police suspect arson and two men are under arrest. More than 1,000 people were on board the ferry when the fire broke out. At least six people were taken to a hospital for smoke inhalation. Nearly two dozen others were treated on board. Cable television dramas seem to get all the attention these days, but only one was ranked among the top-rated primetime TV series of this past year. Still, as NPR's Netta Ulaby reports, that show, The Walking Dead, was number one.
Here's how much of the dialogue sounds on 2013's top-rated primetime series.
Fresh meat, right here. Come and get it.
Fewer people watched The Walking Dead than Sunday Night Football and The Big Bang Theory, but the ratings have to do with percentages, not the actual number of eyeballs glued to the screen. And ratings are what's used to sell ads and pay for what we watch. The other top-rated primetime shows for 2013 include Modern Family, Duck Dynasty, Monday Night Football, and three new scripted shows, namely The Blacklist, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Sleepy Hollow. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Well, folks, it's been a great year. We want to say thank you all for being a part of what we do. And from all of us here on the Serious Side, we'd like to wish you a very happy holiday, a very safe New Year's Eve. And with that, it is time for our final thoughts. And Dr. Princess Odia, you're up first. Real quick, we only have 5 minutes to close out the show.
Well, wonderful. I just want to say great year. I've enjoyed sharing all year long. And I also want to just leave with this. As we embark on a new year, 2014, I want us to really, really, really not think of this as a cliche, but take this seriously. Really appreciate all of the friends that you have, the family that you have, the times that you spend with people. I've just come to a friend's home, and they got a call of a friend, a family friend, dying. They just talked to him yesterday. He had an asthma attack, and now he's gone. We have to take value to every conversation that we have with our people. And with that said, I love every last one of you, and I'd like you to visit me online at bountifulgroup.com to register for your credit and business development course. January 8th, online classes available. Thank you, bountifulgroup.com. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for getting your last plug in for 2013. Thank you, and you have a great day. All right, KP, man, final thoughts.
I just want to let everybody know, especially yourself, how much I appreciate y'all listening to my nonsense over the years, and I hope that everybody has a good beginning of the year. Don't make any promises that you're not going to keep. I'm promising to lose weight, but I know I'm not. So here's looking forward to a good 2014.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Absolutely. Jerome, man, final thoughts.
All right. Well, I just want to say happy Kwanzaa to everybody. And
just with Paula Deen, the Duck Dynasty guy, Fox News, the woman Justine Sacco, who tweeted going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, and Steve Martin's tweet about how do you spell something pasta. He said it depends if you're African-American, if you're going to an African-American restaurant or an Italian one. His insensitive tweet towards the end of the year topped off the fact that in 2014, I do not want to hear somebody saying, I can't believe people are so racist, it's 2014. Please don't say that this year, because I don't want to hear it. Thank you, and have a good year.
Well said, straight to the point. Thank you. Jeez. Oh, man, my right-hand man, Mr. Elias, man, final thoughts.
I thank all the listeners for listening in this whole entire year, man. It's been a blast to do this show. I enjoy doing this show. And once again, listeners, thank you. And I got to ring in on what Dr. Davis said. As a man that had health challenges this year, hey, go to the doctor. Don't be scared to go to the doctor. All my African-American brothers, I know we're all big and strong, but, hey, take your ass to the doctor, because you're not that strong that you can't be put down. So get to the doctor. The best preventive medicine is just that, preventive medicine.
Oh, man, the man that gets the first and last word. GOG, final thoughts.
I just want to encourage everybody heading into 2014, take a serious assessment of your life and the people and events and things around you. If it doesn't make you money, make you happy, or make you healthy, consider leaving it in 2013.
Well said. And here, my final thoughts would be, once again, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back stronger than ever in 2014. And a shameless plug, if you don't have anything to do, come on and hang out with the crew at the J. Ryle Show Tuesday night, 10:30 Central Time. You can come hang out with us. We're going to bring the New Year's in for the East Coast and the Midwest Coast. Left Coast, we're sorry. Unfortunately, we won't be able to take care of you. However, if you are a part of our little family, let us know. We'd be more than happy to jump on board with you, to bring it in with you for 2014, because we have people listening from everywhere. We appreciate the fact that everyone is tuned in. So come on in, hang out with us. Great music, bring your own bottle. It's the safest party in the world. You can get drunk in your jammies. And here's the last thing. You have to be 35 years old. If you're not 35 years or older, you're not getting in. We're checking IDs. All right? And on that note, my main man, who came back, made his triumphant return. That's a big story for 2013. The one and only GOG. GOG, if it's Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. What time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Ryle Show.
Oh, my God, folks. 2014 is going to be a blast. So for Jerome, for Mr. Elias, KP, Dr. Prince of Aldinia, my main man, GOG, God bless you guys. Be safe on New Year's Eve. Don't do anything stupid. And remember, if we're talking serious stuff, it is the serious side. See you in 2014.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.